ओम शांति। लास्ट नाइट व्हेन शी लुवेन आस्क्ड मी अबाउट द क्लास, आई सेड टू हर, ओके गिव मी अ टॉपिक। सो शी सेड ओके, लेट्स लिसन टू टुमारो मॉर्निंग्स मुरली एंड देन सी व्हाट कम्स आउट। And so on one hand, she came up with the topic from this morning's Murli. But the Murli very much gave a lot of clues, didn't it? What are the aspects that prevent us from experiencing freedom? And Baba, as soon as we come to Gyan, Baba has told us that Jivan Mukti comes within a second. So do you feel that? Do you feel that you came to Baba and experienced Jivan Mukti within a second? And you feel liberated in life ever since then? Do you feel that? Nobody's saying yes. Something is wrong. Either Baba is wrong or I'm not doing something right. Huh? To a certain level, who feels that they've experienced Jivan Mukti from the time they came to Baba in 1 second? Nobody? Nobody? What does it really mean then to experience Jivan Mukti? In bhakti, definitely the concept that you drop everything, you leave everything, and you become free from everything. Whether it's your body, your relationships, the world, actions, everything, everything. This is the bhakti concept of liberation. Nay, I'm not sure to what extent they're aware of the whole idea of liberation in life, in that that living and yet experiencing freedom. I'm not sure how much that concept exists in bhakti.
It's true, in the beginning there is that experience of being totally free in such a way that as if magic happens all around you,
and after a while the magic stops, or you have to create the magic to happen, right? But I don't think that the idea of the life that Baba offers us is that we experience Jivan Mukti right only in the Golden Age. We have to experience it here too. So the question arises, what does it really mean to experience Jivan Mukti today? I think that it is possible. I think that it is possible to experience that stage. But I also think that few souls experience it. And the reason why a few souls experience it, I think all of us can experience it. The reason why a few experience it is that when we first listen to knowledge, then definitely knowledge feels right. We become drawn to it, we become attracted to it, and yet knowledge is only very much on an intellectual level. We recognize the truth of it, we recognize the potential, and recognize the potential quality of our life through practicing the knowledge that Baba gives to us. But that experience actually, that awareness, is very much on an intellectual level. And as a result, in the beginning, you apply on an intellectual level the knowledge that Baba has given to us. But after a while, it really becomes a chore, or it becomes a grinding stone. It becomes an exercise. And we human beings are not just creatures of the intellect, or we're not just left-brained people. We are balanced people, balanced souls, and
we need to experience the nourishment of both the head and the heart, the mind and the intellect, thoughts and feelings. All of these different aspects have to come together. But I also feel that it's not that liberation in life will come right at the end of the confluence age. So for me, the exploration would be that how can I learn to make my spiritual effort that I have to make, enjoy making the spiritual effort, experience the result of those spiritual efforts, and also enjoy being in Baba's company, enjoy exploring the aspects of Gyan. That doesn't mean that I have to become perfect and pure now. Liberation in life is sometimes taken to be that stage in which where you are there. You've got where you've got to go, and you're there, and that's it. I don't think it's quite like that. I think we have to arrive at a place in which there is an understanding of myself, or an understanding of who I am and where I am. And again, I don't mean through my head, because that's what Baba does. When I receive Gyan, it is there. But that understanding becomes my reality, in the sense that I begin to live that understanding. So the understanding has become an experience, a reality, a feeling. That understanding has changed into a faith. That understanding changes into a conviction. And that conviction in itself gives me the experience of living what I understand. I think that the biggest discrepancy often arises within us Brahmins is that we understand a lot. We understand a lot. And we become confused about what we understand and what we are today. And with this confusion we struggle. Instead of recognizing that, yes, I understand this, I am not this today, but I have to make the journey to get to what I understand. But also, this whole aspect of understanding, an even bigger confusion arises when I think, I feel that what I understand is what I have to be now, or what I am now. In the sense that I understand different aspects of virtues, or different, the purity, the level of the purity of the soul. I understand it. That doesn't necessarily mean that I am it. And I deceive myself in thinking that I am it. And when I don't behave like that, there is something doesn't compute. And in fact, it is this that causes me pain and sorrow and suffering in Gyan. The pain and the sorrow in Gyan is not from what I used to be, actually. The pain and the sorrow comes, the peacelessness comes, from what I understand and what I don't live. And the confusion that when I understand something, I think I am it. Do you see what I'm saying? And, you know, when we become so good at speaking knowledge, we become so good at speaking about aspects of dharana, and we feel good when we speak it. And when we are speaking, it really feels, I feel the reality of what I'm saying inside of me. But when I stop speaking, when I go out there to live and interact, whoo, something is gone. And this causes us pain. And so I think that this understanding, if I want to experience liberation now, I can still have my old samskaras. I can still also recognize my new samskaras. But there doesn't have to be a conflict between the two. The experience of liberation will come when I see something in front of me and I have the ability, I learn the power and the ability and the clarity
to not live what I see. At the same time, I learn the ability to live what I understand, bit by bit by bit by bit. And this actually is a beautiful feeling. I'm not there. I'm not perfect. And I'm not beating myself up either. Then I'm making effort in the way that Baba is teaching me to make the effort, at a pace, with sense. That's all I can, the word I can think of is, I'm being sensible about how I'm moving along on my journey. When I started thinking, when Srila Ben phoned me this morning before class and told me this, the subject, I said yes, and then a flood of thoughts came in my mind about the subject. And I thought, yeah, this is good. And one word that kept coming back to me, how do I recognize I'm not liberated in life? So the first bit was just kind of an intro to move into the rest of the understanding of the subject. How do I recognize, what is the method to know that I am in bondage to something? Whether it's a relationship, an action, a situation, a place, a person, anything, anything. One word. Sorrow, yes, it's true, but that's what will be the next step even. And it's too far, you've gone too far by the time sorrow comes to retreat and to come back and say, to stop yourself. If you want to make effort, if you want to make the effort in the way that you recognize both your weaknesses and your strengths, because just because you have gyan doesn't mean your weaknesses have gone and doesn't mean that your strengths have all come either. But you do, gyan means to walk on the journey of caution. Gyan means to know, to see, and say, okay, that's not where I must go. This is where I must go. And so the first step to recognition of bondage to anything, what is it going to be? It's very easy. When I tell you, you will say, yeah, this is true. How do you recognize attachment? Even before you finish your karma, it's too late. I mean, we're not going to finish our karma just because we understand something. So karma comes in front of us at all times. All times karma comes. And sometimes we don't even recognize it when it comes. One word. Intellect wanders. Something else. Feeling, but you know, something comes in front of you and you can just, warning bells start. Let's put it that way. How do you recognize, how do you make sure that the warning bells ring and you listen to those warning bells that are listening? Yoga? Sometimes you don't even recognize you're not connected. You feel great, you love Baba, and you know, all of this is there, and yet yoga isn't happening. Pulled by somebody, and therefore, and one word that comes to my mind is compulsion. You feel compelled to do something, compelled to have something, or compelled to be with someone, compulsion. And the clever ways that that compulsion will come, and you'll find all sorts of amazing, wonderful excuses to say, but this, and but that, and but the other. Tendencies of compulsion is a method to know your bondage. When you feel compelled to move in a certain direction,
that's when warning bells start and you have to go, whoa, 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 put a hold back. Never step into a situation which is compelling you towards itself. Never find yourself in a cage which is compelling you towards itself, whether it's a relationship or whether it's a situation. The moment that feeling comes, whoosh, then you go, wait, hang on a minute. I'm especially like that when I meet new people and I kind of feel, whoa, you know, and I go, no. Or I see other people, you know, gravitating towards someone and I think, hey, I got to watch it here. It's a very interesting situation. And whoever they may be, until I'm clear in my mind that if I'm moving towards something, why am I moving towards it? And what is the power and the clarity with which I'm moving towards something? If I'm feeling completely drawn into it, then I'm going to find myself in a trap. And this actually happens in terms of everything, anything. Even situations, I find myself, you know, I find myself being drawn into situation, wanting to be somewhere where other people are. And then if I don't get there, it's like I'm missing out on something. Even if it's a good situation, a positive situation, a situation which is, you know, you would say that, well, you know, it's for my benefit, it's gyan. But if it's not coming towards me and I'm feeling I have to manipulate, I have to, manipulate is the word that comes to my mind. If I have to manipulate circumstances to make something happen for myself, even if it's for my spiritual benefit, this, at the end of it, is going to leave me feeling sorrow and leave me feeling disappointed, leave me feeling drained. Is the word that comes to my mind. Because there will be a certain expectation, then I will compare, and then I will compete, and then there will be jealousy, and I will look at other people. All of these kinds of different aspects actually leave me feeling drained at the end of it. And in terms of situations, we are like that very much when there is a bondage, and it's probably a bondage to my own samskara of some kind, feeling, wanting to be part of something. And so bondages are interesting, because bondage means karma. So this kind of compulsion means karma. But we're very clever. Just because something is karma doesn't mean I have to enter into that situation. Whether it's a feeling of karmic situation with someone, whether it's an attraction that is compelling me towards it, or whether it's repulsion that's compelling me towards that situation. Even repulsion will compel me towards the situation. But because, you know, if I feel repulsion towards something, I will think about it, I will find ways of sorting it out, this is also karma. But in a karmic situation like that, gyan means to recognize it. Gyan means to see that this is like this and caution yourself. It means to protect yourself. It means to say, I'm not going down there. I know, okay, let's take the situation of repulsion. You know, there is a real feeling of, comes to you in front of someone, or they do something you have nothing to do with, but they do something and you don't like it. and you feel your blood boil inside of you, and your head starts spinning, and you think, why are they doing this? Who do they think they are? Blah, 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 all of this. You know, this is karma. And if I feel compelled that I have to say something, and I have to do something, and I have to report them or whatever, because this makes my blood boil inside of me, and if I do that, then actually what I'm doing is I'm actually reactivating that karmic situation. And it's going to become worse and worse. It's actually not going to improve. But in a situation like that, what I am going to have to do to sort that karma out, that karmic situation out, is I have to make peace with it. Running away from it won't help either. Because wherever I go, someone else will come up to show me something that is the same. Moving away, going away is not going to help. It's better to stick it out, so to speak. But also, make peace with it. Equally, when there is a compulsion in the form of attraction. Equally, if I become drawn to it, then I'm reactivating karma. Even though it feels so good to give in to that situation, when I recognize that I'm liking this person because of the way they do something or the way they are, all of that, any of that. Some karmic situation that's coming up, some unfinished business that's facing me with itself. Often Brahmins make an excuse saying, well, I've got to settle this karma. So they want to enter into that karmic situation to resolve it. This is stupidity. Because this is not using jnana. This means I shelve jnana for that moment. And I'm no different to a lucky person then. No different. Just even if I'm a Brahmin and they're a Brahmin, absolutely no different at all. But to use jnana in a situation like that means to recognize, see it, even if it's most attractive. I have to see it and I have to use jnana and use yoga. And today's Murali was really very perfect to address these kinds of situations in which Baba was very clearly saying that if you use jnana and yoga, then you become free from bondage. And using, you know, if jnana is just on an intellectual level, it will feel like a struggle. But it's okay. It's okay. Even if I use jnana and tell myself 50 times a day, don't go there, don't go there, don't go there. Tell yourself 50 times a day, don't go there. Don't pick up that phone and don't make that call. Whatever it might be, but I have to initially at least use jnana. And when I begin to use jnana in this way, then actually I will give space to enable yoga to happen. The use of jnana, the space between where I am and that karmic situation. And this space will help me have yoga. Space in terms of distance in my mind and space in terms of having the ability, the distance between my feelings and that situation to be able to have yoga. When I bring Baba into the situation, then I'm actually able to deal with that. When I come in front of such an individual with caution and not get swallowed up into my own feelings and the feelings that that individual is creating for me. Whatever it might be, and so liberation can only be experienced at the confluence stage when I use jnana. And this is why, you know, Baba doesn't give us knowledge once and say, right chaps, you know it now, and that's it. Go away and do what you have to do. Jnana is such a slippery fish, if you like, that it slips out of the intellect very quickly when our emotions are involved. When our emotions get involved, somehow Jnana just goes out of the intellect. Because up until now, we have been driven by emotions. We have been driven by our feelings. You know, the use of our intellect had purely just been very much on an academic level. You know, in the Lokic world, somebody's clever when they're academically clever. And they can pass exams and claim degrees they're considered to be very clever. Their life can be a total mess. They can't make relationships work. They can't earn a living for themselves. They can't be happy. They can't be peaceful. But if they're academically clever, they're considered to be very clever. And people give them a lot of respect on the basis of their achievements. But this is not necessarily a clever intellect. This is one way aspect of a clever intellect. But a clever intellect is now in Jnana, where an intellect that is able to make all aspects of life work for itself. And that's why Jivan Mukti means to strengthen your intellect. Strengthen your intellect on the basis of Jnana and on the basis of yoga. Yesterday, Dadi said an interesting thing. She said, Jnana brings you realization. Yoga enables transformation. And dharana makes you an example. And when you become an example, you are able to, just your dharana, your example of your dharana is able to do service. You don't have to make extra effort for service. Now what at the end of the day does service? You know, all of us are not clever at giving jnana in the way that the dadis are, or our seniors are so good at giving classes. All of us are not good like that. But yet we can all do service. And what does service is our energy and our vibration. And that energy and that vibration becomes created on the basis of what we have taken from Baba. I feel that experience liberation in life in Brahman, the confluence age, also means to learn to build a relationship with everything. Until now, we haven't had a relationship with anything. We haven't even had a relationship with our own selves. We haven't had a relationship with our body. We haven't had a relationship with our friends and relatives. It's all one-way traffic. Give me, give me, give me. I want, I want, I want. And, you know, this has been the basis of our relationship with people. Whether it's even objects and things, situations and circumstances. When you build a relationship with these, then there is a give and take taking place. We as human beings are creatures of relationships. We're not supposed to be loners. We're not supposed to be sitting in caves by ourselves, in solitude for the rest of our lives. We use solitude as a practice, as a method to empower ourselves now at the confluence age, which is a different thing. It's not about sitting in a corner and living your life by yourself. This is not possible. Even then, you need to learn to build a relationship with everything around you, even your own body. I thought it was curious when Baba said it's easy to be free from the bondage of relationships and objects today in the Murali, or easy to be free from the bondage of these two things. Is it? Is it easy to be free from the bondage of relationships? When Baba was saying the difficult one is your own body. And the reason why the body is so difficult is it, it,
it's an incredible thing when you think about it, that you are so intertwined with your body. It is part of you and you are part of it, inverted commas. In the sense that you are at one with your body. And so, for the soul to become separate, to develop the consciousness, this is what really takes a lot of practice. Why it is that the dadis got there is because this is what they did in the early days. The practice that helped them the most is they sat hours on end being so conscious. Hours on end. Dadi often relates stories about how they used to sit with each other and they would just give drishti to each other and go into soul consciousness, then they'd be gone for hours. This was it. This was how they had exchanges with each other. And so they have learned the understanding, they have learned the experience of the separation of soul and body. We can be 15, 20, 30 years in Gyan, but yet we haven't put in that energy or that time and that effort into being totally and fully soul conscious. It's only when we can experience that deep state of soul consciousness that are we going to be able to experience liberation. Because then we will be able to perceive all that which is bondage very easily. Building a relationship is a very, very important aspect of Brahman life. Building a relationship with my own body. What does it really mean? What does it mean, do you think, to build a relationship with your own body? To be so in tune with yourself, first of all, as a soul, as a living, thinking, conscient energy, and its original state. Actually, we as Brahmins we become in tune to everything around us very quickly. We perceive things very quickly. It's just that often we don't listen to what we perceive. What we intuitively know, we don't always listen to our own intuition. And I don't mean intuition logically, you know, body conscious type of intuition, but spiritually, when you are, you know, in touch with your own self, and when you've experienced that deep state of peace, which we have, and when anything that is not quite like that, you begin to pick it up very quickly. In the same way, within, you know, I sometimes sit in meditation and I just marvel at the way in which our body works and functions. So much going on within the body, this blood, gallons of blood that's being pumped around the body, and yet you don't hear a thing. You don't feel a thing. You don't see a thing. And so being in tune with your body also, in that when something, actually you know, your body knows, you the soul knows when something is not quite right. Something is missing. But do we stop to hear that? Building a relationship with the body means that when it is experiencing pain, this is what you see Dadi do, where even Dadi Kumarka, where, you know, whatever else she's going through, when I saw her in July, and when I saw her, it was so clear to me, that she is not feeling any sorrow or any pain. Whatever is that is going on within her own physical body, she's not feeling any pain or sorrow from it. And so much is happening. Every time Dadi Janki comes down with something, she comes out of it even stronger and even more energized and even more powerful. And you don't see, she may become frail and weak physically, but you don't see her face looking like it's suffering and in pain.
And so, for us to be able to become like that, it's because there is the relationship is being built, and the first relationship with the body is that I recognize it to be my tool. It is a tool. It is a facility. And I, the soul, am the one who is using that facility. And I think that in yoga, we have to create that practice. But also, creating that practice as I walk and move along and do things. That it is a tool that I am using, just like you pick up something and use it for anything. I don't know where, think about a knife that you might pick up to cut a piece of fruit. You've actually become consciously aware and practice this exercise. That pick up a knife. I have picked up this knife and I am about to cut this piece of fruit. And you can see this knife doing its work of cutting this piece of fruit. And if I think about my body like that, and not just in terms of my own physical organs of these, the hands and the eyes and the mouth and the ears, but even thinking about the mind and the intellect like that. Thinking of the mind as a tool which helps me generate thoughts and ideas, which is what it is. It's an organ of the soul. It is not the soul. The mind is an organ of the soul. It's a faculty of the soul. And the function of the mind is to think. That's all. And I, this conscient being that is behind all of this, can say, right, how much am I going to think about this? Or am I going to say, right, I don't want to think about this anymore, but I want to think about something else. And am I able to do that? I have to introduce these kinds of practices as a discipline. There's a word that came to my mind earlier on, I've forgotten now, as an exercise. I have to practice this as an exercise in order for me to build a relationship with it. The body is a tool, and with this tool, you know, good workmen or good craftsmen will always look after their tools. And they will not give, in Oxford, we have, you know, brothers in the maintenance department. Many of them do different things, different aspects of repair work, and each one has their own set of tools. And they won't give their tool to anybody else. A, because they will be careful about how they use their tool, and when somebody else uses their tools, they don't know, if they don't use it properly, they're going to spoil their tools. They take care of their tools. If somebody wants to come to do some work, they will say, are they going to bring their tools to come and do this work that they want to do, because we're not going to give our tools. And it's not because they're attached to it, but they want to take care of their tools. They want to look after their tools. So that those tools, they're in their toolbox and they know exactly how they're going to work and when it's going to work. And if something is not right, if the tool's not working properly, they will repair it and put it right. Do I take care of my body in that way? Thinking of it as a tool that is there to serve me, to help me produce a masterpiece. This is what craftsmen do. Craftsmen create masterpieces. And for such work, you need good tools. And my body actually communicates with me and tells me. Nowadays, you know, they have methods by which they do muscle testing. And when something is wrong with your body, through muscle testing, they tell you what medication is going to work or what is lacking in your system and what it is that you need. I think it makes sense to me completely.
that if something is lacking in your body will tell you that something is lacking. Am I able to listen? The question is, am I able to listen? Do I listen when my body tells me? And do I do it as well? And the same aspects is applicable in terms of my mind. Sometimes my mind needs a rest. Sometimes my mind needs exercise. Sometimes my mind needs nourishment. And I have to have the clarity to be able to know what I need when I need it. And so together with Gyan, knowing what is right, what is wrong, what it is that I have to do, how I need to respond to situations. But then the second aspect that will be needed to be able to implement what I understand to be right is the power of yoga. And the power of yoga is a method by which we're able to be in tune with, not just with ourselves, but everything that is happening around us. You know, when Baba says, you know, we've heard stories where Baba would start giving knowledge, Baba would start speaking, and those who were yogis, they would just gravitate and they would come from all sorts of places. When they didn't live in with Baba in the same place, they lived in different buildings. And they would just come. They would turn up. And Baba would say, those who are yogis will come, will be at the right place at the right time in the right way. Liberation doesn't mean anything else but to know what to do at the right time to give you what you need when you need it. Where you don't have to manipulate to make things happen. You don't need to abuse to make things happen for yourself. Liberation in life also means that you're at the right time, at the right place, in the right way. You will turn up. You will be there. You will be drawn. You will be pulled to be in that place. Even if nobody else is, if nobody else wants to be somewhere, but you feel you need to be there, you go there and it was the right place for you to be. You don't need to think. Liberation also means I don't need to think, evaluate and analyze and to go somewhere and do something. This for me is a struggle. Right thoughts come at the right time. I'm not perfect. It's not that I'm perfect and that's why I experience liberation in life. I'm experiencing liberation. I'm experiencing this kind of freedom that God will guide me where I have to be. My destiny will take me where I have to be. And whatever thoughts and feelings I have, let me follow them through. And effort becomes easy. I remember coming to Madhuban one year. It was really an unexpected time where I just had the inspiration. I had to go. And I had to do so many different things to make it happen. And everything I had to do, it would happen. I didn't have to kind of think, oh well, you know, it wasn't that I was trying to do something and it wouldn't work out. I had the thought out of nowhere in the oddest situation. And everything would just fall into place to make it happen. And when I actually arrived, even when I arrived, it was a very strange situation in the sense, on the way up here to Abu, from Abu Road, I was coming in the jeep. It was late at night. It wasn't that late actually. It was 9 o'clock at night. And somebody threw a stone at the jeep that I was in. It was a time when they were doing these things, these Aborigines. And then they would loot the jeep. And it was one of the Madhuban Nivasis who had come to pick me up as well. And he knew how to deal with this kind of situation. So anyway, we just drove off. But when they threw this stone at the windscreen, I had the whole of the left side of my face cut up into small different cuts. And I had a big piece of glass go through my lip, inside my mouth, and I was covered in blood. Covered in blood. And when I arrived here, my clothes everywhere, inside my clothes was just nothing but glass.
But not one thought within me that, why did I do this? Why did I come? It became everything, even all of that no thought, but it was like an amazing experience of deep love. My lip had become like this because, and everybody was laughing at me in Madhuban, but it didn't feel not a big deal at all. And the other experience I had was that it was like, I would literally have a thought. I would sit somewhere and I'd have a thought, go there. And I'd go there and that situation would finish and I'd have the thought, go there. And it was like every day the feeling was I was just being maneuvered by Baba and drama for things to just happen. And it was the best Madhuban ever. You know, every year people say they have best Madhubans, but that was my best Madhuban. And that was in 1991, January. And the feeling that I don't have a care in the world. When God comes to me and he says to me, right, I'm here, I'm going to take care of everything for you, you don't really need to worry about anything, you just do what I ask you to do, and that's it. Isn't that liberation in life? What more is there? When God says to me, you don't need to worry about a thing, I'm going to take care of everything, just be a carefree emperor. So then, what must I be if not liberated in life? When time is fixed, this time is the time to take me where I have to go. I just have to do my bit. I'm not here to solve everybody else's problem. I'm not here to sort out all the things that are going wrong in the world. I am here to make my spiritual effort, and I'm here to do what God tells me to do. That's what I'm here for. And when I allow myself to do that, time will take me to my destiny. Because the confluence age is the time for transformation. In bhakti they remember, they say that Krishna told Arjuna that when the time comes for effort, you will make effort. And this time is for this. I just have to sit back and let things happen. With this awareness that time is for this. God is making this happen for me. Every day, I know I'm in certain situations and I think, wow, who has a life like this? Who has a life like ours? Simple, healthy, wealthy, happy, peaceful. If service becomes tension, whose fault is that? Nobody can impose anything upon me. I'm not doing something because I'm forced to do it. It means I have something to learn. I have something to learn in situation. And if I don't learn it, then that situation will keep coming in front of me. Freedom comes when I learn my lesson. Freedom from my own sanskaras comes when I learn my lesson. Freedom from other people comes also when I learn what they have to teach me about myself. Everybody that comes our way comes to teach us something. Show us an aspect about ourselves. But the question is, how much do I really want to learn about myself? Only effort I feel I have to make is to learn about myself. I don't have to learn about anybody. I don't have to learn about anything. I need to learn about myself
and I need to learn about God. And I have to have that honesty with which I am prepared to learn about myself. Here we go. That Ijanki will come and take class tonight in Om Shanti Bhavan. Yoga from 6 p.m. in Om Shanti Bhavan. Great. So, okay, so 6 o'clock, yoga, and then Nadi will arrive when she arrives. Om Shanti Bhavan. Yeah. So, where were we? Learn about ourselves. Learn about ourselves. The greatest fascination I have with myself is me. And the greatest fascination that I have is God. I don't need to learn about anybody else. I don't want to learn about anyone else. I only want to learn about myself. Who I am and where I am and where I'm at and how I'm going to get where I have to go. And the beauty is that every day, if nothing else, just being in the company and being in the atmosphere, I'm able to have a vision of myself. If I want to see it. If I want to see it. What was the experience you had about yourself in front of Baba the other day? Did you have any thoughts, any feelings, any experience about yourself? Or not? Oh, how far your journey has come. Every time I sit in front of Baba, I have to see this. And I have to feel this. But especially in front of Baba, when I'm sitting in front of Yak Baba, there is no reason why. But the desire to change, the desire to go where Baba wants me to go. I said to Daddy the other day, I have no complaints about my life. I have a wonderful life in every way I could possibly think of. And perhaps I'm enjoying my life too much because I don't think about becoming complete and perfect. Of course she pulled my ears for that, but that's okay. That's why I told her. So that she can tell me, well, okay, fine, but you do need to think about becoming complete and perfect. I don't think about it, not because I don't want to make the effort, but you get in a situation whereby when everything works, you do again need to introduce exercise. You need to expand your horizons all the time. So that there is a feeling of growth taking place. This is another thing that Brahmins can take if there isn't progress taking place. Then you feel in bondage to your own lack of progress. And so certain exercises, certain practices, what should they be so that we can deal with both the aspects that feels like a bondage and enjoy the aspects that are liberation. One of the things that I'm doing this time in Madhuban is just creating or generating inside myself such a feeling of yoga and experience of a space inside myself in such a way that it continues when I go back. I was, my experience in front of Baba had been the other day that as if I have spent so much time managing myself and managing others, that I have not spent as much time in deep yoga as I should. When you become busy in doing things, you kind of plod along and you think, it's okay, it's okay.
inside everything else is fine, in a sense that there isn't any complaint, or there isn't the feeling that, oh, you know, Baba's out of the picture, or I'm not doing anything I shouldn't be doing. So this is what I was saying when I said to Daddy also, that I need to think about further, that everything is great, but deeper and higher and more subtle. And this, again, also automatically brings the feeling of freedom. When movement is taking place, when progress is taking place, then there is the feeling of achieving what I had set out to achieve. We didn't come to Baba to make effort for a short period of time and then kind of carry on in our old ways again. We came to Baba to go from A to B. We need to think about what it means to become Karmadeep. And yes, when there is freedom, then freedom from that aspect of body consciousness means freedom from the vices. And I suppose part of me feeling my life is great is that I manage my vices. I can manage my vices. And if I manage my vices, then also I can feel good. So I don't live my vices. Doesn't mean I don't have them, but I don't live my vices. And when I recognize them and I don't live them, surely it's much easier to be rid of them with the power of yoga. And it's like, watch them in front of you disintegrate. And most of us will probably have one or two that are prominent. And those are the ones that we need to work with. And then the experience of freedom from everything becomes very natural and easy. I don't do anything out of the influence of the vices. And this is... So I'll stop here actually if you want to make any comments or have a bit of a discussion. Nice to just keep listening for an hour and a half. Yeah, sure. I mean, I think that communication is important. And when I say managing, I mean in terms of comparably. I didn't spend enough time in the exploration of the inner self. But also, I spent, even if I did, it was more on a thought level than having the thoughts and then just allowing them to, you know, deeply become part of me than just thinking. And when I talk about managing others also, it becomes more that than the other, the self. But yeah, I mean, of course, whatever it is that we need to do externally, we need to do that. Whether it's communications or interactions, and it's something that I was thinking about earlier on today, actually, not in the context of the topic, in the context of myself, that when I say that I need to be more aware of yoga and more allowing my thoughts to become feelings, I began to think about, oh my God, all the things that I've got to do, how am I going to do that? That, you know, in terms of service, in terms of responsibilities. But again, you know, sometimes we can be too hanging on to all of those external things too. And so to do what you have to do and leave the rest. It's like there are some aspects of service, for instance. If I take an interest, then people will come to me about them. If I don't take an interest, that is, if I let them get on with it, they will get on with it. Do you see what I'm saying? I'm not taking interest because I don't care. It's that
I'm there, available, but if I put my head into something too much, they will let me put my head into it. And it's helpful to them, but then they are not doing it as they should, or they could. Or they would if I didn't put my head into it. So this also, I think, is important to be able to do what needs to be done, but at the same time let it go when it needs to let go, so that you can do other things. This balance is also vital. But yet still be available. It's not that you don't care, but you let them run with it. Otherwise, you end up doing it when others could and should. Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I understand. The question is about this whole aspect of how do you make peace with something that you are repulsed by. This is what I was saying. And if you want to make peace with it, you have to have acceptance. No matter what someone is like, how someone is like, you cannot make them what you want them to be. They are the way they are. And so the first step to making peace is acceptance. And that means that you don't expect them to be anything other than what they are. And often, when there isn't acceptance also, is that you are actually not hearing what's really being said there. Or you're not seeing what is really there to see. That, you know, what I mean by that is that you've got into the mode of seeing their defect. There are qualities too, but you've got into the mode of seeing the defect, and you can only see the defects, you can't see anything else. And therefore, when you listen to them, when you communicate with them, your perception of them is tainted by your vision of the defect that you're seeing. And so, they're saying one thing and you're hearing something completely different. And you are never going to come to a place of compromise or understanding about each other. And so the first step is acceptance. Acceptance of that person. But also something that I've been thinking about over the last little while is that this thing about what you see in a person on the surface and being able to see past that, which is on the surface. Being able to see beyond what is on the surface. And that means, ultimately, my relationship of soul consciousness with them. And within that, seeing them the way in which Baba wants me to see them. That they are here as a Brahmin because they want to be here. They're here doing service with me because they want to be here and want to do service. And whatever else there is there is the makeup, is not the hardware of the soul. The hardware of the soul is their original qualities. This is the software. And software can change. You can get rid of it. And so in order to let go of that feeling or to make peace with that, with the whatever it is that I see in it, I also need to change my vision to see something else. And if I need help to be able to see something else in them, let me ask other people. Let me see them. If I can't see it for myself, there will be others who can see it. And others will actually tell you about their good qualities. If you go to Dadi complaining about someone, no matter how right you may be, she will not just say, yeah, you're right, that person is really bad. She will always tell you about their speciality and their qualities and all the good things that they are and all the good things that they're doing, whatever they might be. And so, I need to change my vision and on that basis make peace with them. And then it becomes easier. Anyone else want to say anything? Share an experience? Bas? Karen? Yeah? In the what? Yeah, the tools. Yeah. You have to become pure. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Great. Good. Good, good target to have. Yeah. Absolutely. Good. Good. Okay. Anybody want to say anything before we finish? Yeah. 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 Okay. Shanti.